Hello and welcome to the Deathcast. I am your host, author, and journalist Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me. We're prepared to take our first look at the Cult of Matamoros. Before we get going, as always, I have the normal show notes. If you'd like to follow the show on social media, just search for the Deathcast. If you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple of ways you can do this. First and foremost, you can go to your favorite podcast app, like and subscribe to the show. You can also go to tinyurl.com/dcastpatreon, where for as little as $1.99 a month, you can get access to early ad-free shows as well as exclusive content, just as my first two Patreon members, Channel and Anthony, did, as well as the largest Patreon contributors monthly, Samantha, Debbie, Betty, and Matt have done. Alright, now that all of that's out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair, kick back and relax, grab yourself a drink. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes, let's go into the crypt! Now, the case of the narco-Satanists, also known as the Cult of Matamoros, which was led by Adolfo Costanza, is one that you have probably heard before. A lot of true crime podcasts have covered it. Specifically, they have covered the disappearance and murder of American Mark Kilroy. There's a lot more meat on the bone of this particular case than just a single murder. The narco-Satanists killed a lot of people over a fairly short period of time, virtually undetected, as they operated south of the border in Matamoros, Mexico, but also in Mexico City. And we're going to be focusing on the foundations of this cult, as well as its growth, the crimes that the group is known to have committed, as well as those that they are suspected to have committed. Well, when most people think of a cult, they think of groups like Heaven's Gate or the People's Temple, which was run by Jim Jones. The Cult of Matamoros was actually based upon a Caribbean religious belief system called Palo. Specifically, one of the offshoots of Palo, which is known as Miambe. Basically, this religion, this Palo, is a mixture of Christianity and Caribbean beliefs, African beliefs. It's a whole mix of conglomerates with many offshoots. And Miambe is one of the most famous of them, as, at least according to some documentation, they really focus on the dark side of things, black magic, as it were, involving animal and even human sacrifice. And I'm gonna give a warning early on now that we're going to be talking about some pretty disturbing things, as they didn't just ritualistically murder their victims. They would remove their brain, hearts, other organs for use in ceremonial magic, placing the brain inside of a cauldron known as a nagana. As part of this belief system in Miambe is that the brain will give the nagana the powers and the mind of the individual that the brain belonged to, thus increasing the magical power and strength of not only the leader of the sect and the nagana itself, but also of the adherents of that sect. Now we're going to look at the origins of this religion just briefly, and this is coming from Wikipedia. I'm going to read directly. Quote, Palo, also known as Las Reglas de Congo, is an African diasporic religion that developed in Cuba during the late 19th or early 20th century. It draws heavily upon the traditional Congo religion of Central Africa, with additional influences taken from Catholicism and from spiritualism. An initiatory religion practiced by Peleros, male, and Peleras, female. Palo is organized through small autonomous groups called Mananso Congo, each led by a Tata, father, or Yayi, mother. And further on in this article, it breaks down the various branches of Palo, the main four being Ryumba, Kimbisa, Miyambe, and Monte. Some people mistakenly refer to the religion as practiced by the narco-Satanists as Palo Miyambe. Realistically, it's just Miyambe, with Palo being the main basis for it. And for Western minds, the easiest way to think of it is Christianity. You have different branches of Christianity, like Catholicism, Protestants, Episcopalians, etc. Miyambe is just a branch of the overall religious movement known as Palo. And it is a religious movement. It's both respected and feared throughout the country of Cuba and in many Cuban communities throughout the United States. And one of these Cuban communities is really where this story begins. Specifically in Miami, Florida, where on November 1st, 1962, to a 15-year-old Cuban immigrant by the name of Delia Aurora Gonzalez, the time of his birth, his mother was extremely poor. But she was also a very big believer in Miyambe. We know that at 6 months of age, his mother brought young Adolfo before a Palero, which is a priest in Miyambe. It was a wealthy Haitian man. Now, as the story goes, as this Palero gazed upon young Adolfo blowing cigar smoke into the child's face, Adolfo remained strangely quiet, and after a few moments, the Palero announced to Adolfo's mother that he was quote-unquote a chosen one, who was destined for greatness and power. And it's because of this meeting that this man becomes Adolfo's padrino, his teacher, in Palo and in the art of Miyambe. This is something that Adolfo's mother took to be a great honor, as she herself was a practitioner of Palo and was in fact a priestess of Santeria. In the coming years, young Adolfo is going to be instructed in various magical practices associated with the Palo religion, many of them involving sacrifice of some type, mostly animals. However, there are some stories floating around out there that Adolfo's apprenticeship may in fact have included the sacrifice of humans. However, these cannot be confirmed. We do know that Adolfo's Palero was a practitioner of Miyambe, the dark arts of Palo, and that he infused a belief in this particular religious sect into the young boy, showing him magical rituals in addition to giving him beatings whenever he failed to live up to some task that was put before him. It has been said that his Palero was one of those who practiced the religion simply for the sake of taking a life and spilling blood in the form of an animal, with the idea being that the spells he would cast would bring misfortune or death to whoever the spell was targeted at. So right from the beginning of his life, Adolfo de Jesus Costanza was immersed in this world of black magic and blood. And this immersion is only going to grow stronger as Adolfo becomes older and really starts to practice this magic himself. And that's really what this entire case is about. It's about black magic and power. Specifically, Adolfo's quest for power to live up to this story that he was told by his mother as he's growing up, that the Pallero had said he was a chosen one who was destined for greatness. Because not only did Adolfo believe this, but his mother believed it too. And as devoted as Adolfo is to his religion, he is also equally as devoted to his mother, who is going to end up having three other children all by different fathers. However, the siblings as well as his mother would all state that Adolfo was always the favored child. Back to the Pallero, the old man whose name I have never been able to discern worked his magic for numerous drug dealers in and around the Miami area, working his magic to stave off arrests, avoid police detection, and divine the correct times to do a shipment of drugs. Adolfo saw all of this, participated in the secret ceremonies that the Pallero would do, and also took in the message that the old man had for him. Believers can never use narcotics. To do so will spell certain death for them, and to do so will negate the power of the Pallero's magic. And this is something that Adolfo would adhere to for the entirety of his life, and that he would instill in his believers, his followers. The way that it was put to him, it didn't matter what the unbelievers did, the unbelievers being the drug traffickers that the old man brooked with, so long as he himself, his young apprentice, and those within his little circle did not partake of these temptations, then they would always be protected by the magic. Right around the time Adolfo turned one in 1963, his mother moved from the United States to San Juan, Puerto Rico. There aren't many stories concerning Costanzo and his family from this period of time. All we really have is information that his mother would later provide, stating that he was a good, quiet child who was a Catholic altar boy, while she herself worked in marketing and advertising. We do know that in 1972, the family returned to Miami, and this is where we start getting some stories concerning Adolfo and his mother, how she taught her son not to fight back against others with his fists, but instead to curse them with magic. There are numerous stories of neighbors waking up to find headless chickens on their doorstep, a bloody note stuffed down the throat of the animal, or a chicken or goose head placed inside of their mailbox. Stories of people bullying Costanza and his mother rushing out to defend him, and these same people waking up the next day to find a dead animal on their lawn. As one individual who lived in the neighborhood of Little Havana put it, Costanzo's mother acted as though they were royalty, and everyone else, those who were non-believers, were animals, worthless and undeserving of anything more than scorn. There are other stories, too, from Adolfo's siblings who state that these tales of black magic rituals being performed in their home and by Adolfo's mother are simply not true, that they were a good Catholic family. This same version of events also holds that Adolfo did not meet his padrino until he was in his teenage years after the family returned to Miami. However, this cannot be verified, and it is more likely than not that Costanzo was, in fact, introduced to this padrino when he was 6 months old. There are also stories that Adolfo and his mother traveled to Haiti quite often while they were living in Puerto Rico, and while there, his mother introduced him to the practice of voodoo. However, the family has denied this as well. But at the same time, after everything happened and the things that Adolfo is going to be accused of come to light, Adolfo's family, including his mother, would state that even as a young child, they noticed that he seemed to possess mystical powers, able to do things such as travel outside of his own body, reading the thoughts of other people, as well as contacting the spirits of the dead, and healing people just by touching them. These are all claims made by his mother, Delia. So, since she has made these claims, I think it's safe to assume that we have to take her and her family's arguments about not having been involved in the practice of Santeria, Pialo, or Miambi as being untrue, and simply a way to divert attention away from themselves. Now, I'm not saying that Adolfo's siblings practice these religions, but by every indication, it seems apparent that his mother, in fact, did. Evidence is given about this by a man named Ernesto Pichardo, who was a priest of Santeria in Miami, who knew Costanzo and his mother, who said, quote unquote, "The mother used to brag about how powerful her kid was. You listen to her, you'd think he was another messiah." So she obviously had ties to that religion, despite her denials. Now, when Delia and Adolfo returned to Miami in 1972, she was married. Although this man is going to end up passing away, Adolfo did end up with a step-sibling from this union. And we know that his mother is going to marry two more times, which is going to result in further step-siblings. There's at least two brothers and one sister who are related to Adolfo Costanzo. By all accounts, the first marriage that Delia had after Adolfo's father abandoned her and the young boy was a decent individual who looked on Adolfo as his own son. However, the subsequent stepfathers that Adolfo was going to know did not look on him so favorably. Adolfo's brother, Fausto, stated that the second stepfather would beat Adolfo mercilessly, and that this was something that Delia would not allow, as she was the only one who was allowed to punish her oldest child, and this eventually led to their divorce. Court records indicate that Adolfo's mother, Delia, had no known means of support financially, Although, for a period of time, she did own a home. Police records indicate that she had numerous aliases and was arrested for a variety of charges over the years, including shoplifting, assault with a weapon, fraud, grand theft, writing of bad checks, child neglect, to name just a few. Delia seems to have lost the home that she owned in 1984, and the family began a series of moves, jumping from one apartment to another, leaving just as the landlord was set to evict him, and moving on to the next location. The stories concerning these living spaces are pretty much all the same. Upon getting their tenant out, the landlord would enter the apartment to find it covered in human and animal feces, blood splatters, holes punched into walls, electrical appliances destroyed or stolen, as well as things like plumbing fixtures destroyed, and the entire apartment basically unlivable without serious repairs. And the majority of the time, these landlords were so happy to be rid of Delia that they simply did not pursue charges against her. So this is the world that Adolfo Costanza is brought up in. This world of serious upheaval where, in the eyes of his mother, he can never do any wrong. His mother is constantly one step ahead of the law, moving from man to man, while allowing her oldest child to be immersed in the practice of Miyambe. And while Adolfo would remain devoted to his mother for the remainder of his life, it's been noted by a number of individuals familiar with the case that it may be because of how slovenly the family lived. Adolfo was obsessively clean, showering up to 4 times a day, always making certain that all of his personal belongings were clean and in order, and that his clothing was always neat and presentable. Even as he progressed through adolescence and went deeper into the study and practice of Miyambi, we know that by 1983, Adolfo's Polero had decided it was time for Adolfo himself to assume the mantle of Polero. That is, move beyond the stage of being an apprentice and become a master practitioner of Palo and Miyambi himself. As the story was later recounted by followers, at the age of 21 in 1983, Adolfo was brought into a sealed, darkened shed where his Polero kept his Nagana and blindfolded. Prior to this, Adolfo had done a number of ritualistic exercises to prepare himself for this day, including burying his white clothing in a freshly dug grave for 3 weeks, which he had retrieved prior to coming to the Polero's home, wearing them as the man asked him various questions, such as, did he sleep for 7 days beneath a ceiba tree and bathed in a ritualistic manner with various herbs, and giving thanks daily to Kadiem Pempe, the devil in Miyambi, whom Adolfo had taken as his own personal deity and guide. According to the story that Adolfo told to his later followers, at this point, the Polero asked him if What was about to happen was his desire. If turning himself over to this deity was what he wanted, as there would be no god for him from this point on, nor would there be a soul left to him, Costanzo is reported to have said that there was no god, and that his soul was already dead. After which, the man began chanting, brushing Costanzo's body with branches from a tree, before rubbing his body with a live chicken, which would soon have its throat severed. After which, the Pollero used a knife which had been heated in a ceremonial flame to etch markings on Adolfo's shoulders, what would be known as his personal signature, his name within the religion of Miambi. After this, the blindfold was removed from Adolfo's eyes, and he was presented with a kissing, which is a denuded human tibia, the scepter of a Pollero in Miambi. We know that after this, Adolfo and the old man set about making him his own Nagana, which is the ritualistic cauldron used by practitioners of Miambi, where they do their spells. The blood and organs of their sacrifices are put into this, as well as other things such as sticks and herbs. The centerpiece of which, to a practicing Pollero of Miambi, is a human skull, something that Costanzo would acquire at a later time. Now, of his personal life, we know that Adolfo, while intelligent and fairly attractive, never really cared much for school. He had attempted college briefly, but dropped out after one semester, and all of the jobs that he had held were short-lived. He had a very short criminal career prior to being made a Pollero. 1981, he was arrested twice for shoplifting, once for shoplifting clothing, the other time for stealing a chainsaw. Although it does not appear that there were any serious legal consequences for both of these transgressions. Some who knew Adolfo during this point in time said that he was attracted to women, although would never bring a woman home to meet his mother, as in his mind, she was perfect. The reality of the matter is that Adolfo was bisexual, although he leaned more into homosexuality than heterosexuality, something that he had been introduced to by his padrino in the old man's shed. There are individuals out there who encountered Adolfo during the years prior to his leaving Miami, who had sexual encounters with him, who stated that he seemed to take great pleasure in dominating and humiliating them. Something that almost certainly stems from his upbringing with Delia, as well as the sexual abuse that he had experienced at the hands of his padrino, because we need to be honest here, that is what happened with this older man in the shed. Now, Adolfo was not old enough, nor was he able to truly consent to the things that the man was doing under the guise of a religious apprenticeship. That, as well as his immersion in the various religions that his mother exposed him to, particularly Santeria, Palo, and Miambi, is really creating a maelstrom inside of Adolfo, which eventually is going to need a release. With any serial killer, there's always the question of nature versus nurture. I think with Adolfo Costanza, it's a mixture of the two. I believe it was always in his nature, but that this nature was nurtured by his mother, his stepfathers, as well as his Pallero to create this perfect storm. Eventually, it's decided that Miami is not the place for Adolfo. He needs to strike out on his own, build up his own list of clientele within the criminal underworld, but also within the legitimate world. As in addition to black magic, his Pallero had also taught Adolfo what we're going to term as white magic or benign magic. You know, love spells and spells for wealth, prosperity, good health, things of that nature. During 1982 and 83, Costanzo and his mother had traveled frequently to Mexico City at the urging of Adolfo's Pallero, where Adolfo had seen card readers and various other practitioners of this white magic, and realized with his abilities as a Pallero, he could very easily make a living for himself there. He also encountered an individual who was said to have connections to the modeling industry, and as Adolfo was seen as an extremely attractive individual, he believed that this was another possible route for him to take to earn money and make connections with powerful people, specifically those working in the various drug cartels throughout Mexico, whom Adolfo hoped to be able to turn into clients. At some point during one of his many trips to Mexico City, Adolfo, who was working as a card reader to earn money while he was visiting, ran across an 18-year-old college student by the name of Omar Francisco Uria Ochoa. The way this happens is Omar was a believer in magic, the occult. He came from a more well-to-do family than most, 60 miles south of Mexico City. At this point in time that he actually meets Costanza, he was living with a former model turned card reader named Jorge Martinez, who made a living reading people's cards. Now, as a youth, Omar had encountered a palm reader that had told him to beware, as one day he was going to meet a very powerful individual who was going to change the course of his life forever. As the story goes, he returned to this model's house one day to learn that there was a new card reader operating in Mexico City, and that the individual, a fairly attractive young man, was garnering a lot of attention from the other card readers. So the two men set out to encounter this individual, who obviously turns out to be Adolfo Costanza. According to Omar, as they approached Adolfo, who was reading the cards for two young American women, and was flanked on one side by a rather swarthy-looking, muscular Mexican man who would turn out to be Adolfo's bodyguard, Martin, he sensed that this was possibly the moment that he had been waiting for his entire life. When Adolfo invited the two of them to sit down, at which point Adolfo began reading the cards for Oscar. Oscar was well versed in the various tricks of the trade. that most of the card readers gave rather ambiguous, non-definitive answers. As he would later state, however, when Adolfo read the cards for him, it was like the man was looking inside of him. He knew specifics about Omar that no one else did. That he had come from a place south of Mexico City. That he was enrolled in college but was not really enjoying his studies. That he had always had a fascination for the occult. And finally, and most startlingly to Omar, that an old woman had predicted he would one day meet a man who would change his life, and that Omar had to be wary. When Costanza pressed Omar on this issue, Omar admitted that this was in fact the case. And according to Omar, Costanza then asked him whether or not he felt that he needed to be leery of him, to which Omar replied, "No, I have been waiting for you." After this, the men spent the rest of the day speaking, with Adolfo informing them that he was a priest of Santeria who was looking to relocate to Mexico City from Miami, where he hoped to be able to read cards and find work as a model. This led Omar's lover to inform Costanza that he had ties to the modeling world and could easily get him work, but could also get Costanza customers, as Costanza stated that one of the things that he offered was the cleansing of people's souls. Many people point to this meeting as the start of the cult that would be built up around Adolfo Costanza. As over the course of the next 2 weeks, he pretty much spends the majority of his free time with Omar, taking him out to eat, to the movies, buying him clothing, ingraining himself to Omar. Omar later said that during the course of these 2 weeks, Costanza had explained to him various aspects of Santeria, while only briefly touching on the heart of the matter for Costanza, his true devotion, Miambi. Not only did Costanza do this, but again, according to Omar, he also correctly identified the names and occupations of all of Omar's siblings. Something that left the 18-year-old speechless, as Costanza told him that he was going to initiate him into his religion. When Omar demanded to know how Adolfo could know these things, Costanza refused to tell him, simply telling him that in time he would know more. This was something that Costanza was said to have picked up from his Polero, this bringing people slowly along the path of Miambi by first showing them the light side of Santeria, before slowly introducing spells to them and eventually progressing to the point of fully indoctrinating them into Miambi. Omar said that after this 2-week period, Costanza had gone back to Miami, leaving him with a set of Spanish cards so that Omar could begin practicing doing readings of his own. Now, this deck was later found inside of a wooden box that was adorned with a strange series of symbols. These symbols would eventually be revealed to be the signature of Costanza that had been marked on his body by his Polero when he underwent his initiation rite. Police later learned that the way that Costanza got control over those who would eventually follow him was by a slow sort of manipulation. He would compliment them, tell them things about themselves, but at the same time, he would let them know that if they did not do as he suggested, then disaster would befall their lives. Many have said that it was this duality to his personality that made those who followed Adolfo want to please him and desire to strive to any lengths to get his admiration. When Adolfo returned to Miami, he and Adolfo would converse on the phone on an almost nightly basis. As in addition to being Costanza's most arduous follower, Omar also very quickly became his lover, as was the bodyguard who had been with Adolfo on the day they met, a young man by the name of Martin Quintana Rodriguez, who Costanza said was his man, while Omar was his woman. When talking police later, Omar would state, quote, "We did whatever Adolfo said. We always obeyed. He could ask anything. Because I feared and I loved him," unquote. When Adolfo moves to Mexico City in mid-1984, he lives at a variety of different places, in an area known as the Zona Rosa, which is where the mystics and card readers mostly lived and worked. Eventually, Omar and Martin would move in with Costanza into one of these places, something that caused a lot of problems between both men's families, although such was Adolfo's hold over the men that nothing their families said or did could convince them to break away from him. According to one of Martin's brothers, he always knew that Adolfo was a fraud and a scammer. However, he never made these feelings known to Adolfo. However, on one occasion, Adolfo confronted him, letting him know that he knew how this brother felt about him, but that if he ever attempted to come between himself and Martin, Adolfo would cut the man's heart out and offer it up to the spirits for sacrifice. And the man stated that he firmly believed this, as the cold, detached way that Adolfo said these words made him a believer in the reality behind them. One unique aspect about Adolfo Costanza is the fact that he could turn men who were otherwise straight into his lovers, as evidenced by the fact that Martin, who had a steady girlfriend named Mara, was the first to be seduced by him. Now, eventually, Mara, who was also into the occult, eventually became Costanza's lover as well. There was a lot of jealousy among the men in Costanza's life. However, he never tried to dissuade this between them, instead seeing it as a way to further bind his followers to him, even unto death, something that other cult leaders have done to great success, such as Charles Manson and Jim Jones. There are also occasional acts of violence committed against his followers, which further drew them to him and bound them to his will. And there's a lot of evidence to support this. Within this unique family dynamic, as Costanza continued to build up his clientele by doing readings in Mexico City, he exerted more and more control over his followers, making one or the other dress as a woman, while Martin worked outside of the home on matters of business, and Omar was kept inside of the house as basically a housekeeper, staying in line with Adolfo's mindset that Omar was the woman and Martin was the man. We can see further evidence of this as Martin attempted to leave on a number of occasions following these acts of humiliation, as well as the beatings that Costanza would give him, only for Costanza to show up outside of Martin's family's home, demanding that Martin return to him, calling him his wife, and stating that he would either kill himself, Martin, or both of them if Martin did not return, which he invariably did. So in these early dealings with converts to him, we can see the full extent of the manipulative nature that lies at the heart of Adolfo Costanza, and which made him so well suited for his role as a fortune teller and faith healer. Congruent to all of this, Adolfo also began dipping his toes into the waters of modeling, with Oscar's former lover getting him into contact with individuals who worked in the modeling world. Costanza began to build a portfolio. And really, modeling was nothing more than a ruse to Costanza. While it fed his ego, it also allowed him to show the outside world that he had an actual career, while in reality, his money came from reading fortunes, and very soon would come from doing much darker things to an ever increasingly powerful and widespread list of clients. Another way that Costanza manipulated these first few followers was by telling them that only they could do certain things. One of these individuals, the former model who had brought Omar into Costanza's grasp, a man by the name of Jorge, said that Costanza told him that out of all those who followed him during this period of the time, he was the only one who could help Costanza do various sacrifices that were needed in order to carry out a particular spell for one of their various customers. Something that, upon reflection, Jorge realized bound him to Costanza, as he was playing up the man's ego and trying to make him feel important. By 1985, Adolfo Costanza was really pulling in vast sums of money from the various readings that he was doing, amassing closets full of clothing and jewelry, but still he wanted more, feeling that his destiny, as his Polero had told him, lay in the practice of Miambi. Now, those who were within Costanza's orbit at this time said that as the money began to flow in like a river, he became extremely generous, not only to them, but also to his mother back in Miami, who continued to, for whatever reasons, live in squalor, even as she had stacks of money, jewelry, and fine clothing lying around the house, all provided to her by her oldest son. Many of Adolfo Costanza's followers later said that when he would do one of his readings for an individual, he would always tell them that if they gave their life to him, they turned themselves, their soul, over to Adolfo and to the devil and turned their back on God, anything was possible in their life. Now, while many people shrunk away from this startling revelation from him, others did not, and as his first year in Mexico City draws to a close, Adolfo's clientele begins to become more and more powerful, more well-off, richer. Because word of his prowess, his magical abilities, was spreading like wildfire, eventually reaching the areas that Adolfo wanted it to, namely the narcos who lived in and around Mexico City. And well, some of those who would begin to hear of him were skeptical, as they did not believe in mysticism. Others were not of that same mindset and believed that anything that helped them stay free was worth it. Now, I don't know if it is still like this in Mexico today, but during this point in time, be it for cultural reasons or just how individuals were raised, people in Mexico were very superstitious, and this is something that Adolfo was going to use to his advantage. So his Polaro was correct in directing Adolfo to go to Mexico City to set out on his own and create the grand future for himself that was believed to be his birthright. A lot of this was bolstered by stories that his followers would tell potential customers. There is a story of Adolfo stepping off of a balcony and seemingly falling to his death, and this follower named Maria rushing downstairs to find Adolfo walking into the house, completely unfazed, dusting himself off. As she tells it, Maria then went outside to see where Adolfo had landed, only to find a red sports car with its roof crushed in. And upon realizing that Adolfo must have fallen three stories onto this car, she began asking the people that were gathered around about what had occurred, only to learn that he had fallen from the sky, or so they believed, landed on the car, and then popped up completely unfazed by the incident. This is the type of thing that Adolfo would always claim was not true, yet his followers swore was, and which reached the ears of the narcos in Mexico and made them want to seek out the man who was now being known as El Padrino, the Godfather, a moniker that Adolfo was given by his most ardent followers and which he embraced. As they gave him a new name, he began to give his new followers different names, casting aside their Christian names and giving them names that he himself had concocted. Experts in cults say that this is one of the many methods that cult leaders use to gain control over their followers, erasing their old identity and giving them a new one that they have constructed for them, gives the cult leader almost parental-like status in the mind of the cult member. We've seen this time and again in various cults that we've covered on this show, where a cult leader like a Charles Manson or a Jim Jones will erase the old identity of one of his followers in order that they will follow them completely and do as they say without question, from the simplest of tasks to the most horrific of crimes. It's really a way of imprinting their will onto the psyche of their followers. In addition to this, Adolfo is also slowly shifting away from practicing the white magic that had initially brought him attention in and around Mexico City, and turning more and more towards black magic, Miombe, casting revenge spells for those who can afford to pay him. These stories, too, are also going to reach the ears of the narcotics traffickers in the area. One story has it that a transvestite who came to Costanza for one of these spells had an issue with a nightclub owner, and that after performing this spell, this nightclub owner ended up having a heart attack 3 weeks later and dying a week after that in the hospital. A number of Adolfo's followers said that these first forays into revenge castings really troubled them, but as things progressed, they found themselves more and more willing to practice these darker arts. Although, as in all things, Costanza was able to assuage their fears and misgivings by telling them that what they were doing was simply the will of the gods, that if one were to serve the powers of light, then they also needed to serve the powers of darkness, and that this was just an extension of that. Practitioners of Santeria, they also were practitioners of Mayambi. Now, eventually, Costanza is going to initiate some of his members formally into Pialo Mayambe. This would be Omar Martin and Omar's former lover, Jorge. They were initiated in the same manner that Adolfo was blindfolded in a room where a chicken would be sacrificed, and he would mark their bodies with his blade, telling them, quote, "This is your family. From this day on, you have no god. Your soul is dead. You have only me, and you must always obey." We know that Omar was the first of the initiates converted and claimed by Costanza, and that this happened during one of his trips to Mexico City from Miami, and that the other two men were converted after he took up permanent residency in Mexico. And while they were the first of his converts, they would not be the last, as next episode we will be discussing the introduction of a woman who is going to become as powerful within the cult as Adolfo himself was, namely El Padrina, Sara Marie Adrete. We are going to end the episode at this point. I sincerely hope that you have enjoyed this first look at the cult of Matamoros. And until next time, stay morbid.